Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Now premiering on the Studio DNA Network, CivPop Writers Room, a new show consisting of the writers of CivPop.com. On a rotating basis, we'll be discussing some classic movies we're watching for the first time, some comic book movies, some nostalgic movies, and what TV shows we're currently watching. But each week, we'll also be taking a look at the movies that are coming out soon and give our thoughts on how we think they will turn out. If you love movies, CivPop Writers Room is the place to be, so come on in and we will pull up a chair for you.
Live from a bunker in the heart of the Ozarks, a podcast that can vaporize you with just the sound of our voices, but we choose not to. It's CivPop. Welcome to CivPop Weekly, streaming live most weekends, are available to download later in your podcast feed, unless, of course, you're a patron.
Patrons get perks!
Patrons get those perks.
Praise soul.
Nice. I'm your host, Aaron Dicer, and he'd be grateful if I sent him some Nutella. It's Andrew Ormsby.
Ahoy!
Each week we'll chat about movies, television, and whatever else from the pop culture universe is on our minds. Good to see you, buddy.
Good to see you, too.
How are you?
To see you in person the other day, which was fun.
Weird times. We did get a chance to see each other in person. This hopeful me that it's like we're right around the corner, right? Like, you know,
yeah.
People are talking.
But you also
vaccines.
Feel like you don't want to rush it.
Correct. Right.
Yeah.
Definitely. So, yeah. It is good to be back with you as well on this beautiful audio and video podcast. And if you want to join the video aspect of what goes on here. We try to go live at 1:30 p.m. Central Time on Sundays. That is always the goal. And so if you want to catch us live, that's probably the best time to do that. We've got a fun show today. A couple reviews, as usual. A best ever challenge, as usual. And, of course, our buried treasure, too. I did get a chance to see a preview of the Trial of the Chicago 7. Netflix was kind enough to give me a screener. For that on my Netflix, and I gave some of my thoughts on that in the members only pre-show, kind of just a little preview, no spoilers, anything like that. We will of course review it in full in 3 weeks once it's out on Netflix. But yeah, we talked a little bit about that there, and thank you to our amazing CivPop members who make this possible, and just kind of a little thank you for that, being able for you guys to listen to that and have kind of that weekly. Little bit of extra content. So if you're interested in being a member of CivPop, just go to the Patreon, patreon.com/CivPop. You ready to get into the show, Andrew?
Oh, let's make it happen, Captain.
All right. Now, I should mention, both for the audio and in the video peeps, we've had technical difficulties last week that, by the way, producer Phil, just like, he's shown through all
he's
that stuff. Like, he made it work. He made the video part of it work, made the audio part of it work. I listened back to a lot of the audio stuff, and I'm like, you couldn't even tell. You know, like, I had that little intro on it, and it's just like, nope, Phil's got it under control. But I will say this, I'm producing the show today. So thank you for your patience, both with audio and video, as we continue to do this. We continue to figure out what it means to self-produce a show like this. So, but Phil will be back. He just, you know, family time, something, wanted a week. I don't know, whatever the case may be. Left
Lazy.
Us here. We'll still thank him at the end because we can't do it without you, Phil.
We cannot
do it without you. All right, let's kick it off by talking a little bit about Alive. A rapidly spreading infection leaves one man trying to survive in his apartment. The movie is called #Alive, technically, with the symbol on it. Very, I think, marketing savvy way to title your movie. So you make sure people get the hashtag in there, but also a key part of the film. So I think that's a very, very smart title that they went with. It is South Korean, so it is subtitled. So if you are offended by subtitles, get over it. It is it's something we're going to continue to have to do.
That's something I want to talk about.
Sure, go for it.
Initially, whenever I started playing the movie, Netflix auto set to the English dubbed version.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, so they speak English. But it took me a little bit to realize, oh, no, the voices are not matching with the lips. So I had to go in and fix my audio to switch it to subtitles.
So wait, so there's an English dubbed on Netflix?
Oh, yeah. There's like English, French. There was a whole bunch in the list. Yeah.
Man, yeah, I guess some people do prefer dubbed. I am not one of them. I try not to be judgmental about it, but it's hard because, you know, subs is better, but...
Yeah. Well, I think with... I've said this 1,000 times, but with anime, you can get away with a dubbed version because, you know, you're not really focusing on how the lips move and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But when it comes to live action, I think that it really stands out and it kind of distracts you. You know,
how was the English voice performance?
Well, for the 5 minutes I watched it, it seemed okay.
Okay,
but it was just one of those things where like I couldn't relate the voice to the mouth,
mm-hmm.
so it was distracting. So I'm like, nope, I got to go back to subtitles. The true way to watch a foreign film.
That's right. That's right. You said it, Andrew. We don't judge people for not doing it, but you're bad for not doing it.
Yeah.
All right, Andrew, what did you think? Did you like it, love it, dislike it, hate it, or it was just okay?
I liked it, I guess. Yeah, I liked it.
You sound like you're still figuring it out.
Well, I'm going to throw out one of my cons away.
Sure, go for it, yeah.
It's a zombie movie.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
If you've seen a zombie movie, it's a zombie movie.
Yes.
But I liked it, you know? So, take that with a grain of salt, I guess. If you don't like zombie movies, you're not going to like this one because it's a zombie movie.
Yes. I mean, we could almost end the review right there. It's a zombie movie. It's a four-word review, or technically, you know, 5 words, but one of them contracted. But it is a zombie movie, and that is a full review. No, I agree with you completely. I am probably on the low side of liked it for that specific reason. There's not a lot new going on here that I haven't seen. Now, I will say as we go into the positives, which are many, because believe me, if this movie didn't have good things about it, it would have been boring. Because again, we've seen so many zombie movies and TV shows and, you know, all that stuff recently. This movie has some really good things going for it. I think the performances are great. There aren't a ton of performances. it's really a two, maybe three person movie when you really think about it. But it's, you know, Park Shin-hye and if I pronounce these incorrectly, please forgive me. Yu-ah-in are really great in this. I really enjoyed the performances. I think he especially communicates very well, kind of a goofball, halted at adolescence, kind of, you know, still, you know, playing online video games instead of going to work, you know, kind of person, and having to deal with, you know, this tragedy, this trauma that's going on around him with the zombie. You know, there's kind of a little bit of Shaun of the Dead there, right? Like, it's not the same sense of humor, really. But it's kind of the same idea of how a doofball might handle a zombie apocalypse.
Yeah.
But this is much more seriously toned than Shaun of the Dead.
Oh, yeah. This is the second half of Shaun of the Dead.
Right, yeah, yeah.
When the movie decides, no, we're done with the jokes. We're just going to make it a pretty depressing, dark movie now.
Right, right, right.
There is one thing that I think this movie does that I find is unique to the whole zombie genre,
mm-hmm.
at least for me, that I've seen, and that is the effect of isolation and the realization of what human attachment and communication with another human, how vital that is.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I've seen that really in any other zombie movie where... because it's always, you know, like a group of people who get stuck together, you know, and the group turns on itself. Whereas this one is a guy is stuck by himself, and loneliness and solitude
mm-hmm.
take a toll on him. And how vital and important he realizes human connection is, which I found interesting and I liked a lot.
I do too. And if the movie, if you're going to say the movie does anything fresh, I think that's it. I mean, there's echoes of, do you remember Warm Bodies? Like the Zom rom-com?
Oh, where love turned you back from the Romeo and Juliet zombie movie.
Yeah, it's not bad. It's actually a better movie than it has any right to be, in my opinion. But there are shades of that here, too, where it's like, you know, it is about how the zombie apocalypse makes you feel lonely. And here's the thing with all zombie movies, right? They're all about the feeling of the world is changing around you and you can't relate. And I think that's a very relevant feeling. Like, it's this idea of there's an underlying metaphor with most zombie movies of what is wrong with all these people? And we all know that feeling. And especially now, I'm sure you very much felt it. It's like, what is wrong with these people? And it feels like there's some sort of weird brain-eating zombie apocalypse going on, even though they're not literally chewing into people's necks. You know, people are doing things and you just go, you know, what is this disease that has captured us? So, you know, that seemed relevant, especially considering the alone aspect of it, right? And just the idea of how do you find human companionship amongst crazy division and all the stuff that's going on in our world right now. I think if the movie does anything that's now and fresh, that's probably it. In that way.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. And I think the second half of this movie, are we doing spoilers on this, or are we only doing Raised by Wolves?
I think we'll probably just do, well, it's interesting you ask. I'm not sure what we'll do for a Sif spoil, but, you know, I mean, obviously we're not going to spoil anything on the show, so just tread lightly, and then we'll decide, you know, if we need to do anything spoiler-wise.
When another character is introduced, I think that's when the movie really picks up for me.
Yes, I agree.
I was getting bored of the repetition of the first half. Don't get me wrong. He is a good actor. And like you said, he does a very good job of, you know, conveying emotion through his, you know, eyes and stuff. It's a little theatrical here and there, but, you know, I don't know if that's just a cultural thing, but once the second half of this movie picks up, I'm like, okay, now I understand and I am digging this movie way more than I was.
I think I'm right there with you. I think it fell into place there, and there's something about the second half of the movie that feels more meaningful, feels more authentic. That I enjoyed as well, very much. I think to get back to kind of what we're talking about and why we're both kind of even low side of liked it, the issue with this movie is when it does get to the actual mechanics of its plot and kind of what it's doing, there just isn't a lot interesting there. I feel like I've seen people with eye makeup and zombie makeup so many times before and they're always doing this thing, you know? And so it's not like watching World War Z where, you know, all of a sudden the zombies are, you know, a different type of disease, or, you know what I mean? I just felt like I've seen the zombie part of this so much that it just, those parts where it's about the action and the tension did not work for me. And it's kind of boring to me because I've seen it too many times. So, you know, that's kind of why it drops down so much, even though there's kind of those, you know, the performances are fine and the themes and the messages are there. Just the in-between times, just like, you know, been there, zombied that, you know, kind of thing.
Totally. Negatives?
Sure.
I'm going to say that there is a mechanic introduced to the zombies in this one, an enhancement, I guess you could say, that I found ridiculous.
Interesting.
I'll just say that it has to do with their ability to focus on things.
I feel like I've seen that a million times before. I don't know. Maybe we're talking about different things. But, you know, here's how I understand zombies. Like, the most basic version of a zombie is the very smallest of motor function works in their brain. Other than that, they are driven by some sort of strange instinctual desire to feed on living humans. Like, that's their, you know, that, and then, you know, the idea that they have, they retain basic, you know, motor skills from their life, you know?
Yeah.
So I didn't know that this added anything different than that.
I'll just say that their hearing and their ability to hone in on the source of sound.
Yeah. That's a typical zombie thing, isn't it? That's all over The Walking Dead.
I thought it was, this one was a little ridiculous.
Oh, so you think it was exaggerated. See, I'm telling you, I didn't even pick up on that because I thought it was the same as I saw on every episode of Walking Dead. Oh, somebody made a loud noise. Here come the zombies. And it's like, I thought that was a zombie thing that they, you know, go towards noise. But you just think it's elevated. Well, yeah,
they go towards noise, but they could be, it's not a spoiler to say this takes place in like in a big apartment complex.
Right, yeah, and the high rise kind of, you know, in the city.
Yeah, but their ability, if they're like in the courtyard, if somebody makes a noise on the fourth floor in the room 407, they know exactly where, how to get there, and like they know where that source of sound exactly came from that room, you know?
I don't know. Is it any more ridiculous than a gunshot on Herschel's farm brings a horde of zombies from 3 miles away? Like,
I'm not going to sit here and defend Walking Dead and say that it's not a ridiculous show.
Well, that's what I'm saying. It feels the same amount of ridiculous as all the other zombie stuff to me.
Okay, I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just ridiculous.
It is. I think what can happen sometimes with movies that have different, you know, in different environment, all of a sudden you're going, man, it brings home how ridiculous that is. And I agree with you. There are moments in this where those kind of zombie reactions, you're just like, you know, come on, that's not a zombie. That's a living person with, you know, some sort of microphone gun or something. Yeah. It's like a shotgun mic trying to pick that stuff up. Man, that's the thing. It's even hard to really tell you whether or not I recommend this. And I think Andrew hit it right on the head. It's a zombie movie. If you really enjoy zombie movies, I think you're really going to like it. Like, if you're a zombie movie fan, I think you're going to have a great time with this. But the things about zombie movies that I end up liking are not the things that this movie is doing well. So, you know.
It's not Train to Busan or anything like that.
Right, yeah.
Where I think it elevates the zombie genre. This is pretty much run-of-the-mill zombie movie with good acting.
Yep. Yeah. I totally agree. If you don't like zombie movies, I don't know why you would watch it. So, so like I said, four-word review, it's a zombie movie. All right. Ready to move on to Raised by Wolves?
Yeah.
Gather round, children. I was programmed to protect you. And now we start again. Does anyone know the story of the three little pigs?
Two androids are tasked with raising human children on a mysterious virgin planet as the human colony threatens to be torn apart by religious differences. The androids learn that controlling the beliefs of humans is a treacherous and difficult task. This comes to us from the mind of Ridley Scott. I should say from the production mind of Ridley Scott. This actually was written and created by somebody else whose name is not in front of me right now, but I should look it up. But Ridley bringing it to us and directing, I believe, the first episode at least. It is on HBO. New episodes come out on Thursdays. There are 9 episodes out right now. Andrew has seen 7 of them. I have seen 4 of them. We are not going to spoil anything. You don't have to worry about that, but we are excited to talk a little bit about this. This is, Ridley Scott is, definitely someone that I am impressed by, and I love the way he creates action. I love the way he creates worlds. And this is pretty impressive stuff. Andrew, what did you think? Did you like it, love it, dislike it, hate it, or it was just okay?
First off, it's from the mind of Aaron Guzikowski.
Thank you.
Who was the writer of one of my favorite movies of all time, Prisoners.
Oh, nice. Nice. Yeah. I'm glad you looked that up. I appreciate that.
My thoughts on Raised by Wolves. Man, I love this show.
So you're firmly in the loved it camp.
Firmly in the loved it camp.
Yeah. I am slightly in the loved it camp. I think you... like this more than I do. But,
probably.
But there is something to be said for just competent world building. And if you can just build a world that is wholly unique, but also feels so relevant to our own somehow this strange foreign planet, you know, androids raising, you know, these kids and religious, it feels right, even though it's so strange and alien and foreign. Man, the world building here is really what sucked me in. Would you say the same for you?
Oh, yeah. That's not my primary love for this series. I think my primary love is all the metaphorical, theological aspects of this movie. How, mm-hmm. you know, being raised by an android, you know, raised by wolves, and how purposefully being raising a colony of atheists because... Mm-hmm. the belief that religion is the downfall of mankind. That's not something that's new. I mean, that thought has, you know, permeated minds before.
Oh, sure.
That
yeah.
religion is the cause of war and mm-hmm. all that stuff. But this show challenges that with the mindset of, is that the fault? Is religion the fault? Or is that just... the curse of humanity is that we're self-destructive, and that
right.
whether there's religion or not, we'll find reasons to, you know, compete and, you know, fight each other.
Exactly.
And it doesn't matter if you're raised by androids or raised by humans that are atheists or raised by religious. But the show, I don't know, you said you're only four episodes in.
Mm-hmm.
The show gets really... I guess interesting.
Well, I'm right already finding it interesting. So
I mean, like there's some twists that come up with the whole theological. This I'll just call it the soul aspect of the show. Mm-hmm.
SOL.
SOL. Yeah. Oh yeah. That is very distinctive. It should be, but not without its own, you know, hints and nods at what religion is to praise a soul and mm-hmm. what a soul
yep.
is.
Yep.
They just, you know, turned it on its head and made soul a sun god. But it's one of those shows you really want to tiptoe around, but you also want to make sure you fully give your just dessert or give it its just dessert for mm-hmm. how good it is and how fresh and unique it is.
Mm-hmm.
I guess something I could talk about. Performances all around. I think that the two that really, or the three that stand out for me, are our three mains, which is Travis Fimmel, Amanda Collin, and Abubakar Salim. I think that out of all of those, Amanda Collin is the one that
yeah.
is just like
totally agree.
On a different level. But I think that those three are the most fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
Amanda Collin, I'll just say this. I don't think I've ever been more terrified of an android until, except in this. I think that the Necromancer is one of the most horrifying, you know, envisions of an android that you could come up with.
Mm-hmm.
The power yeah. level is insane.
It is. And what's amazing is, you talk about being terrified by Mother, the Amanda Collin character, without the exclamation point, because we're that's a different movie.
Mother!
You talk about being terrified by Mother. What's fascinating is, and so amazingly interesting to me, is you also are so empathetic to her. The show does such a great job setting her up in that first episode or two, and the way she loves her children, and... You know, it's kind of that stereotypical mama bear kind of idea. Like, you don't mess with mama bear, you know, kind of thing.
But if mama bear was a god.
Right, yes. Yeah. So you are simultaneously terrified by that character and also somehow understand that character. And that is a really tricky thing to pull off. And it's a testament to both the writing and the performance of Amanda Collin. In this role, that I think it comes off as well as it does.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm totally on the same page with you. Plus, I am just, even just in four episodes, this show is doing such brilliant storytelling to where you understand who the characters are, where they're coming from, and yet you're also learning so much every episode. That's also a tough balance to find when you're world building. You know, giving the audience a lot of new information is dangerous because it can get lost, it can get confusing, but this show somehow manages to teach you about this world in really big ways, but also not confuse you. And I think that's a really impressive feat. So that's another one of the things I've really enjoyed.
Yeah, it's a patient show. It doesn't feel like it has to. It doesn't have to show you every single aspect of this world or the characters. It's okay with living within itself for a while and taking its time. Having said that, though, that first episode could have just been a movie.
It was a movie.
Because it was, yeah, it was long enough to be a movie, but I mean, like, it could have been from beginning to end, everything in it, and I would have,
it's so
I would
good.
Have walked away being feeling terrified, but also feeling like I was given a full story, and everything after it is just dessert. Mm-hmm. And I love dessert. It's so good.
I mean, technically, this show is pristine. It's so well rendered, and mm-hmm. it's and that's, I say that now as you're talking about it being a movie, because it is done with the care of a film. It feels like it could be on the big screen, and yeah. the effects would hold up, and you know, it looks like a big budget sci-fi film, and it's really impressive. It's really impressive. Yeah, I think it's one of those. There's a Ridley Scott movie on HBO, and it's masquerading as a TV show's first episode.
Yeah, you know?
So, it's crazy.
Yeah, though, I would say that Abubakar Salim father is my favorite character in the show.
I can see that.
I like mother, and I like Marcus, who's Travis Fimmel, but there's something, I guess, pure about father, to where he's just a character who you find easy to love. There's an innocence to him, mm-hmm. I guess you could say.
Yeah.
That is very yin-yanged to mother. But you see how each of them, in their own way, encompasses the best and the worst of humanity within these androids. You know, you have mother who is protective and caring
mm-hmm.
To a fault, but you have father who is also caring and loving, but he is, I guess you could say, so pure and innocent to where he is almost ineffective at protecting. He's too, I don't want to say laxed, but mm-hmm. I guess he just doesn't encompass what you would initially think of when you sure. would think of as a protector. So, yeah, they have all these faults, so together they are what humanity is, but at the same time, aren't they supposed to be teaching humans how to not be like what they were?
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah,
the show is full of metaphors and questions that you get to ask yourself. I'm loving it so much. I really am.
Well,
HBO knows what to do.
Yeah, yeah. And we should also mention this is HBO Max exclusive. This isn't airing
that
on
I
HBO.
Did not know.
I maybe should look that up. I believe this is a Max exclusive, or Max original, or whatever they're calling it. But I don't think it's airing on HBO. I think they're just releasing them on HBO Max. So. That's definitely a key piece of information if you're looking for this show.
Oh yeah, interesting. Yeah, so
yeah, so definitely yeah. worth knowing if you need to know where to find it or are interested in it. I'd say as far as a recommendation goes, you can't go wrong watching that first episode. Like, I just go watch the first episode, and if the world building intrigues you enough to watch the second episode, just keep watching the show. That's how TV goes. But yeah, I would definitely recommend giving it a shot for sure.
Yeah. For sure.
I'm really...
You can definitely feel the Ridley Scott in it, but it also has its own voice thanks to Aaron.
Yeah, thanks to me.
thanks to you.
I'm really glad that you're, you know, three episodes further than me and still having such a great time. And in fact, are speaking as if maybe in the next few episodes, it really starts to get interesting and sing. I love that. I love the idea that it continues to do stuff, not just kind of drag itself along. So
yeah,
I'm enjoying this new world of television that is more along the idea of a series than a seasonal idea, where it's this thing where it's almost the British model of TV. It's like just, you know, tell the story you want to tell and then be done with it. And yeah. We start.
Have to worry about syndication.
Yeah,
or anything
that
like
kind
that.
Of stuff. And, you know, we start to see the inklings of creators wanting to do that with Lost. You know, Lost was kind of the first to bridge that gap into the internet, you know, world and the fandom, you know, instant reactions and that kind of stuff. And then also where the creators are like, We got to finish this story. We have a story to tell. We want to quit dragging it out. And so it's nice to see that that's kind of becoming the norm for TVs. Now, having said that, they may drag out Raised by Wolves for 30 seasons. I don't know. I'm just saying that it feels like they have a story to tell, and they're telling it at the right pace, not a stretched out pace. And I really like that. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, definite yeah. recommendation.
As you say that now, and you bring up that the show Lost, I find that to be an apt description of how you feel about, I guess, what you would be your next three episodes, where they answer one question and give you two more.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, you're going to be getting a lot of that. And that's always been an element of a show that I've always appreciated, as long as you don't get too encumbered by questions to where you're like, I just don't know what's going on anymore. And I think that's what happened to Lost. I think they got too wrapped up in making sure they had enough questions to where they had too many. And yeah. then you just like, okay, I forgot what even the questions I was supposed to care about were right. now.
No, but, I think you're right. I think they were forced to stretch things out in a way that made them think, well, we gotta find some other loose ends to create then. And then by yeah. the end, people weren't satisfied with how they tried to tie up all the loose ends. So, yeah, no, I think you're right. I think that is part of the issue. And again, it all stems from not having an exact idea of how you're going to tell the story and what you need to do. So, honestly, I think that's been proven out by Lindelof's later projects, when he did have the ability to tell a full story in the time he wanted to tell it. Yeah. I think, you know, those are really fun stuff, are really interesting things going on there. So, yeah. Yep, definite recommend for me. Since yeah. Andrew said he loved it even more than me, I'm sure that's a recommend from him as well. Take a little time before we head into our best ever challenge just to say thank you again to our Patreon members of SifPop. You keep this thing going. If you love the show and you want to support it and you're interested and curious as to what kind of perks there are, like I mentioned, the weekly bonus audio content, you have your own podcast feed with that stuff in it. You can check all that out at Patreon, patreon.com/SifPop. And thank you so much for even going over there to check it out. It means a lot to us that you would consider that. So patreon.com/SifPop. All right, let's move into the best ever challenge. We're going to take a look at the best ever movies with special characters in the title. This is a strange one. Now, I should say Andrew and I emailed back and forth a little bit, and I couldn't remember what we decided. Did you end up including any colons or commas?
I have one that has a comma in it, but there's also another special okay. character in it.
Yeah,
colons,
we decided
no. And numbers.
Right.
I did not put numbers.
Right. Numbers aren't special characters. We know that from passwords, because you have to have a letter, a number, and a special character. So obviously numbers aren't special characters.
Yeah.
But yes, technically colons are and commas are, but there's so many movies with colons and commas. So basically we're doing best ever movies with special characters in the title, other than colons and commas. So that includes punctuation. That includes all sorts of fun stuff. Yeah. I believe, Andrew, you said you were trying to do all different special characters in your top five?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I tried to do that as well. We'll see how this goes.
Very nice.
And as always, if you are watching live, let us know your choices in the comments. We would love to see those and see possibly what we missed. I will go first.
I was about to say, I always start here. I want you to go first.
Well, since you want me to, I'm going to make you go first. No, I'm just kidding. I will go first. Kick it off with my number five, Lilo and Stitch. Got a nice little ampersand there in Lilo and Stitch.
Okay. Very nice. I got an ampersand coming up.
This is my ampersand movie. And I'm not like a huge Lilo and Stitch like disciple. Like, guys, this movie is amazing. But this is a really fun movie. And I think it kind of gets lost sometimes talking about Disney animation because of so many movies that are like incredibly great next level kind of movies that just a really good movie like this kind of flies under the radar. But I dig Lilo and Stitch, and I kind of dig it as a little bit of a different tone for Disney too. There's a little bit of rambunctiousness there that you don't often see in their movies. There's a little bit of troublemaker that this movie leans into that I think gives it a fun energy. So yeah, I really dig Lilo and Stitch.
It's a fun movie, yeah, for sure. My number five, I'm gonna go with Airplane.
That's right, it's got an exclamation point.
Yeah, I almost went with Mother, but no, I'm gonna go with Airplane. One of the most ridiculous and quotable movies. I think besides Holy Grail, this is the most quotable movie ever. Mm-hmm. Oh, Holy Grail and Princess Bride, then Airplane.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, the movie's great. I love Leslie Nielsen. It's incredibly ridiculous. I miss comedies that are like this, where it's just so crazy and just out of left field that you're like, okay, I'm just going to sit down, and if it's funny, I'm going to laugh. That's all I need right now. You don't need to give me an amazing story or anything. It's a basic movie. They're on a plane. Plane's in trouble. A crew member or a passenger has to try and land it. Everything else is just insane. It's insane. Mm-hmm. I love it so much. So
I'm with you, man. It is probably the epitome of a parody film. Would you go? I mean, I'm not trying to do a separate list within the list of best ever parody films, but I'm just saying it's either this or Naked Gun, right? Like that kind of rises to
both Leslie Nielsen movies.
Yeah, they rise to the top of your brain, at least mine, when I think of kind of what is the epitome of a parody movie.
Yeah. The third one that I would think of that I wouldn't put the scary movies in there. But I would say Wrongfully Accused, which is also a Leslie Nielsen movie. Actually, any Leslie Nielsen movie is the perfect parody film, I think. I think that's the rule.
Yeah, post Airplane, at least, for sure.
Before Airplane, he was a really dramatic, serious actor.
Very serious actor. Very serious actor. And I hear you. I hear you shouting at your mobile device or computer or however you're listening to this. I know there are many other parody movies that are primo examples. Spaceballs, Blazing Saddles,
Men in Tights.
Yeah, Men in Tights. We get it. I'm just saying, in my mind, I do think Airplane kind of rises above the others. Yeah. So
we're not saying that those movies aren't great. We're saying that these movies jump to the front of our mind.
Yeah, like the picture in the dictionary next to parody movie. The Airplane poster.
It's Airplane.
Yeah. All right, my number four is 500 Days of Summer. Got the parentheses in there because, 500 has to be in parentheses, apparently.
Yeah.
I really dig this movie. I think it's one of kind of the first rom-coms to really deal with the idea of modern romance and kind of the idea of, does it all have to be flowers and rainbows at the end? So I really dig 500 Days of Summer.
No, I'm right there with you. Zooey Deschanel is adorable. And so is Joseph Gordon-Levitt. He's adorable too. But I like the aspect of this movie where, like you said, it doesn't have to be sunshine and rainbows, because sometimes things just may or may not work out. And, your feelings about a person at the end of a relationship may not be the same as the epitome of perfection that you had in your mind at what the possibilities could be at the beginning,
Right.
Oh, this could be perfect. And then 500 days later.
Yeah.
So number four for me, this is my ampersand movie. I'm going to go with Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory.
It's a great choice. It was definitely in my honorable mentions.
Yep, Gene Wilder, gotta love that guy. It's just such a happy movie. Besides the Tunnel of Terror, as I call it, it creeps me out to this day. But everything else in this movie, it just makes you feel good and happy, Besides Grandpa Joe, which after watching again, I get it now. People who have been saying this forever, that he is the worst character ever. not like from an acting standpoint, but just like a totally awful person. I get it now, people. You're right. Grandpa Joe is terrible.
Yeah, this is a great one. If you have the time, watch The Couch and sit on this movie. Strike that. Reverse it. We're going to move on to the next one. I have at my number three, What About Bob? With the question mark in
oh,
it.
Oh, yeah.
So, this is just a great movie. This is, listen, I've talked about this movie a bunch of times, and I will continue to tell you this is a movie that is phenomenal. Richard Dreyfuss and Bill Murray, apparently, my understanding, hated each other on the set.
Well, that just makes it that much better.
Right? It's just so perfect for what's going on in this.
Yeah.
And they're both so great in this. They are both so good in this movie, and it's just, it's almost crazy that this movie exists when you think of the plot, but it does, and I'm so glad. So many classic scenes.
Yeah, it's once really you actually like, break down the plot, it's creepy.
It's very dark. It is a very dark movie when you really think about it. Yeah,
but it's funny.
It is funny. Yeah, and even there are
get away from my daughter.
You know, there may be even problematic ways with the way it handles mental health, which we're much more sensitive about now. Like, you know, there's a lot of things in this movie that, you know, so many years later, you kind of look back on. But man, you are gonna laugh. That much is for sure.
Yeah. So my number three.
Yep.
All right, moving on from here to my number one. These top three are gonna be movies in my top 100 movies of all time.
Oh, nice.
Number three. Lucky Number 11.
Yeah.
With the pound sign. Back in my day, we called it a pound sign. We didn't call it a hashtag.
Back in my day, we called it an octothorpe.
An octothorpe. Yeah, oh, yeah, yes. Even, yeah, back in your day, you were...
That's right.
Yeah. No, I love this movie so, so much. Lucy Liu's character in this, I want to marry her because I think that she's perfect. I think that this is Josh Hartnett's... No, yeah, it's his best movie. I was going to have to... I questioned Black Hawk Down, but I think Lucky Number 11 is this his best movie. The twists and turns that this movie takes. It's an all-star cast, too. We got to say that.
Mm-hmm.
Bruce Willis, Morgan Freeman, Sir Ben Kingsley, Lucy Liu, Josh Hartnett, Stanley Tucci... That's an insane cast, and this movie is so good. Sometimes when you get a movie that has a cast like that, the movie is solely relying on, you know, just having those big names, and it doesn't feel it needs, you know, a decent plot or anything. But I think that, if anything, I think that the plot is just made better because of those people understanding how good of a story it is. I love this movie so much.
Yeah, no, you are on record many times for your love for this movie, enough so that I probably need to revisit it, because it has been a long time since I've seen it. I don't remember being as blown away by it as you.
It could have just been the right movie at the right time for me,
course.
Where I'm like, oh, yeah. This is so good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, on
so
to our
your number
top two.
Yep.
My number two is WALL-E.
Trump!
And you're going to trump it. All right, fine. We'll talk about it here in a second. What's your number two?
I'm going to go with Oh Brother, Where Art Thou?
The question mark.
Question mark.
Yeah, that's your question mark movie. I went with What About Bob for mine. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
I love this movie. I love this movie so I was surprised to find out that this is either a movie you absolutely adore or people just hate this movie.
People hate
like,
this
people,
movie?
People passionately hate
this
movie.
Who hates this movie? I want their address.
Know.
I want their phone number.
They're insane. They hate Oh Brother, Where Art Thou more than they hate Cows and Coppers. oh, George, not the livestock. This is George Clooney's best performance. Just,
yeah.
That's it. You don't get to argue it. It's a fact. Yeah,
objective
it's the Odyssey.
Truth.
Yeah, it's the Odyssey, you know, by
sure.
Homer. I love the element of putting it during the Great Depression, making Odysseus instead of a great king, he's a criminal, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Those three guys, John Turturro, George Clooney, and Oh, help me out here. Oh, no. His name was on the tip of my tongue.
Don't worry, man. Listen, I can't do it. My brain shuts down. And as soon as there's pressure to remember something, my brain's like, nope, are you kidding me? I'm throwing that name away. I think it's Tim something.
Tim Blake Nelson.
Yes, yeah. Tim Blake Thanks. Nelson. That's right. Hey, yeah. I got the Tim.
You did. You actually, I hadn't even got to looking it up. As soon as you said Tim, I'm like, oh, Tim Blake Nelson. Yeah. As soon as those three guys, they're just perfect. They're perfect together.
Yeah.
The comedy, I love it. So yeah, that's my number two. And you know what my number one is. So what's your number one?
My number one is my exclamation point movie. My number one is Moulin Rouge.
Oh man. Yeah.
Yeah.
If it wasn't for Airplane, Moulin Rouge would have been.
You mean Airplane?
Airplane. No, I adore Moulin. No, I take it back. I'm sorry. If it wasn't for Airplane, Three Amigos would have been my exclamation.
You know, it's interesting. I almost included Three Amigos just because of technically,
the upside down.
Yeah, technically it's Spanish punctuation and not English punctuation. But
I thought about it too. I really did. I thought it would have been cheating. But yeah, Moulin Rouge, love it. It's my favorite musical. Go ahead.
Yeah, it is. It is not my favorite musical. My favorite movie of all time is a musical. But it is one of my favorite musicals, and a musical, I believe, that brings musicals into the modern era in an interesting way, because it's basically, what's the interesting thing is, I mentioned my number one movie, which is Singing in the Rain. You think of, oh, those beautiful songs that were written for Singing in the Rain. They weren't written for Singing in the Rain. Though that is the songbook of a popular songwriter. Who people knew around that time, who had been around for a while, and they took those songs and fashioned them into a story. So that's what's going on here in Moulin Rouge, too. They're taking existing songs and they're fashioning them into a story. I love that, and I believe this movie does it in such an interesting way and kind of takes that idea to the modern era, because I think most people think of musicals as being written as a musical, as a story. You write a story, and then you write the songs to go along with that story. And don't get me wrong, a lot of great musicals are that. In fact, probably most great musicals are that. But it can also be covers. And I think Moulin Rouge proved that is a viable way to do musicals as well. And so, yeah, I'm definitely a huge fan of what they do here. The performances... most people who have listened to my stuff for any length of time know how much of a Nicole Kidman fan I am. I think she's spectacular here. Ewan McGregor is amazing here. I love everything about this. So it's fun.
This movie's interpretation of the Police's Roxanne is one of my favorite songs of any musical ever.
Yeah.
Their version is so good.
All right, let's talk about your number one, Andrew. You know, a lot of people would assume that the
Pixar
symbol
movie would be your number one.
Well, no. I was gonna say that there isn't a special character in WALL-E, that it's just a space, but there actually is. There's a bullet there. That's right.
Yeah, one of my favorite Pixar movies. Actually, it's probably my second favorite Pixar movie. Behind Finding Nemo. Nice. This movie makes me cry every single time I watch it. At the end, when you think that he's gone and he's just a bot again and he doesn't have a soul or a heart. Because that's what WALL-E is. He is a soul. You could say that if you want to look at Raised by Wolves and what they hope that an android would turn out to be like. I know WALL-E's not really a rope or an android. He's a straight up robot. But he has more soul in him than either father or mother. You know, he's just pure love.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't have much to add that I haven't said before. This is a beautifully crafted piece of mostly pantomime, and really takes from so many of the old silent films and you know, physical comedy and, you know, miming, and there's so much done here without dialogue that is so impressive, and I really
want to see the script for this movie where it's just a bunch of like WALL-E, 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 Eva, 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 WALL-E, Eva, WALL-E, Eva, Eva, right. Eva, WALL-E, Eva.
Yes. Well, there you did. You just repeated the script verbatim. This is a classic. It's one of the best. I love it very, very much. What about honorable mentions, Andrew? Did you have anything in the HMs this week?
I had a couple, just one or two. I mentioned several of them. Number one was Mather, was going to be in my honorable mention.
Might as well.
I do think it is. It spoke to me in a way that the movie didn't intend. The movie is very theological in the sense that Javier Bardem is God and Jennifer Lawrence is Mother Nature and the destruction that's caused by humankind. Mm-hmm. This spoke to me on a level of what it means to live with anxiety and panic attacks. That's how the movie really affected me. It wasn't even until, honestly, during our initial review of it that you brought up the God, Mother Nature aspect of it. And I was like, oh yeah, it's so obvious now. But the movie was speaking to me so distinctly about how it affected me personally that I didn't even focus on anything else. I'm like, the movie's... It's talking to me right now. And that's honestly, I truly believe that Jennifer Lawrence is giving a top five actor performance of all time.
Yeah. It's a great performance. It's a great movie. I echo everything you said. What's beautiful about a movie like that is how it really is the best example of what I call like a metaphor canvas, which is basically a movie that is a metaphor that is so beautifully drawn that you can almost insert your own metaphor on top of it. Now that may be annoying and confusing to some people, but it gives you this beautiful canvas. Now I think he's doing intentional metaphorical things. You mentioned the theological aspect of it. I'll just break this down real quick in case people are hearing this for the first time, but I think there are three distinct metaphors that he is purposefully laying on the screen. One is the biblical creator God, mother being like his creation, his people. Some would say Mother Mary, you know, those kind of things. The baby Jesus, you know, there's the Noah aspect, there's the flood. Like there's a very biblical metaphor going on here.
Yes.
The second is an artistic metaphor that's going on here about what it means to create things, where Bardem is a creator, a content creator, even if you want to say it that way. And she represents the creation, whatever that piece of content is, and how people tear it apart. And you have to just, you know, strike the whole thing and let it go to, you know, give it to the people and then start something new and do a new piece of content. So there's that kind of whole beautiful thing going on. And then there's the Mother Nature, you know, environmental metaphor that's here as well. And it's just... it's such brilliant weaving of those three metaphors that it is not a movie that makes sense on its own story sense, but when you see as a metaphorical canvas, it just is so, it just keeps giving and giving and giving. And yeah, I really, really think Mother is a brilliant, brilliant movie. So yeah,
I'm glad you mentioned it. I think there were too many people that took, I don't want to say that they're wrong. I should preface by saying that. I think there were too many people that took it at face value and just thought this is a dumb movie. It's you know, and if you try and look at it at face value and not look at it in a metaphorical sense, I can see how some people would be like, I have no idea what's going on. This is ridiculous. Because my parents are like that. They don't look at movies in metaphorical aspects. They're like, if the movie is trying to tell me something, it needs to say it. It doesn't need to hide it between layers and layers. And yeah, there are people that are like that. So I love this movie, but I can definitely see it's a movie that you have to know who you're recommending to.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. What else did you have in the honorable mentions?
I would throw out, we mentioned Three Amigos, which is one of the funniest movies ever. Yep. A movie we didn't mention that I like. It's not like I love this movie. I like, it's fine. I Heart Huckabees.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because it has a little heart symbol. It's an emoji in the title.
Yeah, it was the first time. Not even the emoji movie had an emoji in the title.
That's right.
And I didn't know, because I knew we weren't doing numbers.
Right.
But I thought about Seven, but then Seven, it's technically, it's like a special
it's a number.
Characteristic of... but it's a number at the same time, so I didn't put it on my actual list. But just in case it would count, then, I was going to throw that out there. But, what do you got?
The movie Pi is technically the symbol for Pi, is technically the title of that movie.
Speaking of Aronofsky,
yeah,
he likes to make weird movies, man.
My Big Fat Greek Wedding uses the epsilon for the E's. So that, I thought I'd throw that out there. Romeo plus Juliet has the plus sign in there.
Oh, yeah, the DiCaprio one.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And then MASH has the asterisks between the letters.
Oh, they are asterisks. I thought they were bullets. But no, you're right. They're asterisks.
I think they're asterisks. Yeah.
Yeah.
You mentioned I Heart Huckabees. Then I have several exclamation point movies just to mention. Mars Attacks, I really like. You mentioned Three Amigos. That Thing You Do has an exclamation point. Great movie. Definitely worth checking out. The Informant is another great one. And speaking
Which
of great.
What's that?
That's the Matt Damon one, The Informant.
Oh, where he's an idiot trying to he's trying to be an informant to the FBI or something
But he he's an idiot.
Yeah, where he's what's the word? He's implementing himself.
Yeah, going undercover. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then speaking of amazing parodies, Top Secret has an exclamation point as well. That's a fun little parody movie if you've never seen it. That I would throw
Is
out.
Is that
there
the Val Kilmer one?
Yes. Yeah.
Where they do that scene backwards to make it sound like they're talking Swedish.
Uh huh. Yeah. Yeah. That's the one.
That's
you got
still it. One of my. That's still one of my favorite scenes of any movie ever. Watching
you got it.
Books just fly back up on the shelf.
As far as the live chat, the only one I really see is Jay Bourgeois says 50-50 would probably be on their list.
Oh, with the slash.
Yeah, with a slash in it. And I think that's a good call. That's a good movie. And
that is a very good movie.
That is definitely a special character that that we did not mention. So thank you for that. All right, let's move on to the buried treasure for this week, Andrew.
Let's do it.
What's that one thing in any area of pop culture that you want to make sure people know about?
I am going to give a shout out to my good friend Trevor M. Brown again, if you remember. About a month or so ago, he did a short story that was in a compilation book that came out. Now, he has released his first novel. The novel is called The Gloam, G-L-O-A-M. Something that he does in his stories that is one of my favorite aspects of storytelling is world building. Making not only, you know, the specific area that you're in seem real, but the entire world. Creating maps so that you know where they are, not only like where they are specifically, but in the world, you know, like you could point out on a map, oh, that's where they are. It's what made Game of Thrones so great, is because like if you had the map of the Eastern, or not the Eastern, what's the Game of Thrones world called? Westeros?
Westeros,
you have a map
of
Westeros, so you know exactly where they are. And that's kind of what he's doing here, and it's what I love about it. Plus, great characters, a great female protagonist named Avery who kicks butt. You immediately fall in love with her. It does get a little creepy sci-fi-ish, which I'm also digging. Not really a Stephen King kind of creepy, but I see some elements in there that I could see maybe he drew inspiration from this or there or what, but it just comes out to be a great story. And I'm not just saying that's because he's been my friend since I was 6 years old. It's such a good story. And I highly recommend you can go and find it on Kindle. Again, it is The Gloam, G-L-O-A-M, by Trevor M. Brown.
Very nice. Mine is Watchmen. And you may say, wait, didn't you already do that as a buried treasure? Wasn't that a long time ago? Yeah, but I watched it again, and it is that good that I need to bring it up one more time.
I was really hoping that you actually read the comics and that was going to be your buried treasure.
No, no. I found myself in a position to watch this again, and which I don't often revisit shows like this, but man, this is a rewarding rewatch.
Catch stuff on your second rewatch on this show.
Yeah. Oh man. Yeah.
There's so much with the Dr. Manhattan and the
yes.
What's his name? I almost called him Scar. Help me out here.
I'm not sure who you're thinking of, so I'm not going to be.
He plays Scar in Lion King. He's and he's Ozymandias.
Jeremy Irons.
Thank you.
Yeah.
The Jeremy Irons character. There's so much to go with.
Right?
Once you understand what's going on with him, and you go back and rewatch it, you're like, oh, he's so smart.
I foreshadowed this earlier, talking about Lindelof proving later on that he could tell a complete story when he knew what the beginning, middle, and end was.
Yeah.
And you just see it so fantastically. It is also continued to gain in relevance with a lot of the racial issues, a lot of the racial things that are going on in this story. I am so impressed with this work of art. It is for sure 100% in my top three TV shows of all time. And it may be approaching number one. So it is.
Whoa.
It is, yeah, there's recency bias there. I know it. It just came out last year, but I watched it a second time, and it is just so brilliantly crafted. It really is. I made a kind of a smart aleck tweet recently about which is the better 9-hour movie, Watchmen or Lord of the Rings. But there's some validity to that idea. This really is a 9-hour film. It's beautifully broken up into these beautiful 9 sections, and the sections themselves are works of art, and yet the whole thing of all 9 of them is a work of art. I think this is brilliant, brilliant story writing, dialogue writing, directing. This is a perfect season of television. It's amazing.
I think that Watchmen did a perfect job of balancing confusion, like things that are supposed to confuse you, with rewarding answers. And because you going in, if you know anything about Watchmen, you know Dr. Manhattan is a very, very unique character in his sense of time and his sense of knowledge and like where he fits into this world. I think that this show does a much, much better job at answering questions before making you feel confused and just not even wanting to continue, unlike Lovecraft Country. I think that mm-hmm. that show is just way too out there. I think that Watchmen does a much better job of making it subliminal with its messages.
Yeah.
At the same time, because you still are intrigued by what's going on, even if you don't understand it.
Yep.
Initially, yeah. If you don't understand it.
Yeah. Well deserving of all the Emmys it just won. It is spectacular. Filmmaking. And that's
did
what it
Regina
is.
Regina King it's win? Filmmaking.
I believe she did. I believe it pretty much cleaned up in a lot of those categories. So,
yeah.
But I don't have so. It in front of me, so I could be wrong. So I apologize if I am. Yeah. But yeah, if you haven't gotten around to it, I'm just telling you, it is that good. I really enjoyed the Rewatchmen experience. So I would highly encourage
you did it.
I did it. I made a pun and I finished the podcast. We did another podcast, Andrew.
Woo!
Well done. Well done. Thanks for joining us so much for the podcast today. Sif Pop is part of the Studio DNA Podcast Network. You can find out more about other shows on the network at studiodna.media or by searching Studio DNA in your podcast player. Huge thanks to Andrew for hanging out again today.
Thank you, buddy.
Yeah. Huge thanks to producer Phil for abandoning us today.
Thanks, Phil.
But every other week, saving our bacon. So
thank you,
Phil. And actually, I should say, Phil is still producing the show audio-wise this week, just not the video portion. So thank you, Phil, for that. Much love and gratitude to our SifPop members for giving monthly to make SifPop a real thing. Support starts at $3 a month. You get access to all the bonus episodes as well as some other fun perks right there in your own podcast feed. You can find out more information at patreon.com/SifPop. Lots of ways to connect with us. Feel free to send us an email, feedback@sifpop.com. You can also leave a comment, rate us, leave a review at Apple Podcasts. That's always very helpful. And finally, if you're having a good time, your movie-loving friends will probably like it too, so let them know about it and that listening is much easier than fighting zombies with a drone. We will see you next week with some other fun stuff. And maybe check out the podcast. I'm not sure if we're doing spoilers on this. Andrew and I will talk about it. But if so, they'll be in your podcast feed soon. We'll see you then.